You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Join Neil Conan for a discussion about aging baby boomers, advances in technology and medicine promising to make the experience a gentler one for them. That's on Monday in this hour in Talk of the Nation. We're talking today about science on a stage in our continuing series of looking at science and the arts. In 1995, fishermen in the Galapagos staged a strike at the Charles Darwin Scientific Research Center. They were protesting limits on fishing that had been imposed on them by the Ecuadorian government. NPR science correspondent Richard Harris broadcast a story about the conflict at the center, and a continent away, a playwright listening to the radio got an idea. Joining me now to talk about that idea and how it evolved into a play is Michael Hollinger. He wrote the play Tooth and Claw about the Galapagos conflict. It opened last night at the Ensemble Studio Theater in New York. Mr. Hollinger is also assistant professor in the theater department at Villanova University in Villanova, Pennsylvania. He joins us by phone from Philadelphia. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Ira. It's great to be here.
Finish that story, would you please, about listening to Richard Harris and then getting an idea?
Well, I've been thinking for years about the notion of evolution and how I could possibly write a play that deals with evolution that didn't take millions of years, or a play that just wasn't about people standing around talking. And when I heard this news story, the struggle that the fishermen were engaging in with the conservationists there sounded so vicious. The slaughtering of endangered tortoises to make their point, the takeover of the station, setting fire to things. It was so Darwinian, shall we say, that I kept thinking this would be a great sort of action to hang this play on. You could get a lot of metaphor out of that. And the events struck me very powerfully, so I began a series of, I guess, sleuthing, digging up journals and trying to begin research to figure out what actually happened and who were the players, and gather facts so that I could create a fictional world around it.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I said, this was a new play opening, but you've been working on it for quite some time, right?
Yeah. Well, as you said, the news story hit in early of 1995, and so it took me about 5 years to do initial research on the piece. And then through the Independence Foundation in Philadelphia, I got a grant to travel to Galapagos and tour the islands and do initial research, and then develop the play with the Arden Theater Company in Philadelphia and Ensemble Studio Theater, which commissioned it. So over the next 4 years was the writing and development period. The Arden Theater in Philadelphia just finished their initial run of the play, and now it's having its New York premiere at Ensemble.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of the plot and some of its main characters?
Sure. One of the names that kept coming up in my research was the name of the female director of the Charles Darwin Research Station, an American woman by the name of Chantal Blanton. And I say female because she was the only director in the history of the research station there that was a woman. And I was really struck by that because of the ferocity of these events, just the notion of this North American woman in a South American world where there's just a whole lot of action going on, and I thought that would make an interesting character. Hmm. I contacted her by phone and began doing a lot of phone interviews for a couple of years, actually, until I met her. And although the character is quite different from her in many respects, the essential dynamic of this stranger in a strange land, a very committed scientist trying to do her work despite these economic and social pressures, that really grabbed me.
Hmm. There always has to be some sort of conflict in drama, right?
Yeah.
So what did you create? You didn't have to create the conflict in this. It was there?
Well, conflict exists on many levels. The external conflict, the conflict between the scientists' work, the conservationists' work, and the troubles they get into when they start trying to place restrictions on the fishermen's activities, that was certainly very much inspired by real-life events. Some of the events of the play, the discovery of slaughtered tortoises after the fishermen start striking back, the sort of siege that was laid to the station, those are closely based on actual events. But, of course, I had to invent a world around it, too, because I didn't want the play only to be a docudrama of actual events. I wanted it to spin a story about a woman who travels to the islands with very high ideals. In her case, the character is a herpetologist. She's a reptile specialist hoping to rejuvenate the island's tortoise breeding program because the giant tortoises are quite endangered. In particular, she has a mission in mind to find a way of breeding Lonesome George, the last remaining tortoise from the island of Pinta.
Right.
And so he's sort of the Smoky Bear of the Galapagos Islands. And so the relationship that she develops with this tortoise and her high ideals come in conflict with the with these fishermen and their priorities, which are far more economic.
1-800-989-8255 is our number, 1-800-989-8255. We're talking with Michael Hollinger, who is a playwright, Tooth and Claw. Our producer, Annette Heiss, saw it. She loved the play. So
oh.
there's a theater review for you. she said that she talked about the theme that the conflict between the fishermen, the people who are, you know, killing the tortoises and people who want to preserve them. And she said you balanced it very, you didn't really have a solution. You balanced it very well in the play.
Well, an interesting thing happened. Because of my conversations with Chantal Blanton, the Charles Darwin Research Station director over the phone, she became a hero of mine. Her struggles and her fight to preserve the species and to do her scientific work. And when I went to the islands themselves, I started hearing the other side. I was going down thinking, good conservationists, bad fishermen.
Right.
But when I actually got involved with interviewing fishermen and interviewing other scientists, people in the tour industry, locals, I started hearing their side. And, of course, much of South America, especially Ecuador, is in very dire economic straits. A lot of people from the mainland emigrate to Galapagos because of its tourism, because of its fishing. It's really one place where they can get jobs and support families and live out some dreams. And so from their point of view, you know, a lot of the scientific work feels as though it's being done at the expense of human beings. All this money and resources and attention goes to saving these tortoises. What about the people? So a lot of, for me, about the play was trying to do justice to all of those impulses. Obviously, I don't want people to slaughter tortoises. I'm a conservationist at heart. But, of course, just as in our own country, whether you're talking about the lobster industry or the timber industry or the salmon industry, that we're always going to come up against this conflict between conservation and economics because people need to work.
Did you visit the Galapagos, and did it change your view of what you thought when you got there?
Yeah, it sure did. I got an opportunity to go for about 2 weeks, and I was just an ordinary ecotourist for a while, and then I stayed longer, and I interviewed some people. You know, the islands, as anybody who goes will tell you, are fabulous. They aren't lush like a Hawaiian island. They're very barren and very moon-like in some respects, some of them anyway. But the austerity of them just makes your appreciation of the flora and fauna so much greater. I felt like I was walking down an avenue in Hollywood, saying, "Oh my God, there's a flightless cormorant. I've seen you in pictures. There's a marine iguana." They seem like celebrities when you finally get there.
Yeah, 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Don in Medford, Oregon. Hi, Don.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just wondering. You had mentioned this relationship she had had with this tortoise. Now, is this something that was realized on stage? Theater, I was curious about that.
You had to bring a giant tortoise on stage.
Believe me, the casting call for this show was really hard. Early on in the development of the play, I realized certain choices had to be made. And dealing with islands, one of whose main features is the incredible fauna that they have there, you have to say, well, first of all, can we put these creatures on stage? No, clearly we can't. Second of all, can we represent them in any vivid way? Well, you could make slides of them and talk about them, but that seems to be sort of anti-theater, which is about people interacting in space. You could have Julie Taymor-like Lion King puppets prancing around, which could be done. But for this play, I took my cue from a quote of a Panamanian bishop who had traveled to Galapagos in the, I think, 16th century by accident. He blew there by accident. And he said, "It looked as though God had caused it to rain stones." And this notion of stones, of this place being a place, a very kind of cruel and forbidding place of rock that somehow produces life really was kind of the guiding image. So both in the original production at the Arden Theater Company and now in the Ensemble Studio Theater productions, rocks around the stage are transformed through the actor's use of them, through lighting and the actor's use, into various creatures. And so Lonesome George the Tortoise is a big rock.
Talking with Michael Hollinger, playwright, Tooth and Claw, this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Is this your first play that tackles a science subject?
It is, though as I was working on it all these years, I kept thinking, you know, I could write science plays for the rest of my life. One of the things that really struck me was that I've worked in theater for years, nonprofit theaters, and I kept reading anecdotes about biologists working in Galapagos or working to save species in Mauritius or all over the world. And I kept thinking, well, I don't know that many scientists. Why do these people seem so familiar to me? And I realized it's because they do just what theater people do. They have very strong, high ideals, a lot of vision, really low budgets, and they find ways to pursue their work through ingenuity and, you know, in the seat of their pants. And it just struck me as very similar to the culture of nonprofit theater.
Yeah, they're very passionate, both of you. Both your cultures
are
passionate.
Yeah, it's true. And actually, in the process of writing and even rehearsing the play, you notice all these parallels. I was working at the Ensemble Studio Theater in rehearsals, and we were rehearsing a scene about, you know, the tortoise incubator breaking down and the director of the research station kind of chewing out her employees for getting this thing fixed. We've got work to do. And then we went into a meeting afterwards, and the artistic director is making some, you know, doling out some commands, and the copier's broken, and so, you know, he's saying, we need to get this copier fixed, we got a show to put up. So it's very much the same kind of thing going on.
Life imitating art.
Yeah.
Have you been inspired by any other science writers or playwrights or anything like that?
Well, I've paid a lot of attention to plays that deal, recent plays especially, that are dealing with scientific and mathematical themes. Tom Stoppard's plays Arcadia and I'm blanking on the other one, and the play Proof, which is more mathematical.
Right. Michael Frayn in
Copenhagen.
Copenhagen, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think people get turned on by is that after a lot of popular entertainment that might feel kind of dumbed down, is that they can watch something that engages their minds. And of course, if it's good theater, it's not just engaging their heads, it's hitting them in their hearts and their guts. So that's the challenge. But I think when audiences realize that they're being called, their brains, their minds are being called forth in a piece, that they need to do some of the work of the production, that it won't just come out and sit on their laps,
mm-hmm.
they are excited by it. They want to do that work. That's partly why they go to the theater.
Any chance for an extended run or it being picked up some other place?
Well, it would be great. The run is a limited run that goes till May 9th at Ensemble Studio Theater. But you never know. Based on history, New York press can do a lot of things to a lot of plays, and they can wind up at other locations or they can get extended. It really all depends on how they're received. Usually, with my work, whenever it gets done in a theater, whenever it premieres, it usually takes a few months or a year or so before other theaters around the country might start to pick it up and produce it themselves.
Well, so you're working on the next play? I don't imagine it's another science play, is it?
No, I need to take a little break from science. The next piece I'm working on is a musical, actually, about barbershop quartets in the early 40s, in the early 1940s, that is. But I've tucked away a couple scientific topics mm-hmm. for the future. I've been really fascinated by a fellow named Frederick Winslow Taylor, who developed this system that really we see now, we think of in the icon of the efficiency expert with the stopwatch. That was basically Taylor, and mm-hmm. he invented pretty much our modern sense of time management.
Wow.
So if you get frustrated standing in front of a ATM machine waiting for your cash, it's because of Taylor.
Well, good luck to you, and we'll wait for that play to come out.
Thanks, Ira.
And good luck on this one. Michael Hollinger is the author of Tooth and Claw about the Galapagos Island. It's playing now at the Ensemble Studio Theater in New York. Our program is produced, directed by Kevin Wade, our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Our librarians, Kim Oleski, Alphonse Finn. If you have any questions, surf over to our website at Science Friday. science.com, and you can also leave us email and download the back editions of Science Friday on your Audible player, and Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.